Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today's date is August 28th, 2003. Today's session is entitled, A Vision for Peace, for Those Who Are Weary of Conflict and War, Session 4, Encountering Disillusionment, Rest, Restoration, and Healing for a Broken World, Some Help from Isaiah 56-66, presented by Luther Peterson. Number PEL 2003-04. Let's listen in.
To our session here, I'm going to close this door.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. Now, welcome to session 4 of our studies in 3rd Isaiah. The basic theme being peacemaking today. Where does homeland security end and world troublemaking begin? The third Isaiah, I think all of you have been to these before now, haven't you?
No,
you
have not.
Okay, let me just recap it. Okay. Third Isaiah is Isaiah 56-66. It's that part of Isaiah written by another prophet who is in the Isaiah school of theology, who writes after they return from exile in Babylon. And second Isaiah is commonly known as Isaiah 40-55. Beautiful passages of comfort to people and promise that if they go back, they need to be brave, and when the time comes to go back to Jerusalem after the exile, and God will be with them and things will work out well. So now the exile has over and they go back about 520 BCE, thereabouts, and they discover that they have lots and lots of problems. It doesn't just work out so beautifully. Among these issues are the ones which we've been talking about on Monday. We talked about worship. They couldn't agree on what kind of worship they should be doing. And on Tuesday, the whole issue of justice. They couldn't agree on how their spiritual life should relate to issues of justice in the land. Hunger and greed and all that sort of thing. Yesterday, it was a matter of inclusiveness. They could not agree on how inclusive their group should be, whether they should receive outsiders and foreigners and all these kind of people. Today, it's the whole business of peace. What really does make for peace in a church or a land or a community? What is it? And the whole challenge of what is it that makes for peace? And then tomorrow it'll be, what is the role of suffering? Where does redemptive suffering end? And where does meaningless suffering begin as we try to work together? And these issues then, which are still with us, they haven't gone away. So this is what we're at today in this series. It's a vision of peace for those who are weary of conflict and war. And the subtitle, Are Wars and Rumors of Wars in Church and the World All We Have to Look Forward to? Let's begin with a prayer of St. Francis of Assisi, which I'll just read and we'll just share. Make sure we have some Bibles first. Everybody have a Bible? Great. I want to bring over a few Bibles here. Anybody else need them here? Okay. All right. Y'all have a rest or y'all got one? Okay. I'll set these here. Grab a Bible. There are a couple of them over here too, in case. Welcome. Good to see you here today. Okay, we'll begin with the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi as we deal with the subject of peace and peacemaking. What is it, and what in the world is it that makes for peace in the church or in the world? What are the real ingredients that go into that? Is over against what a lot of people think is what makes for peace. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. Grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying to ourselves that we are born to eternal life. Amen. There was this awful head-on collision, and lo and behold, out of one car steps a beautiful young woman who is entirely unharmed, and out of the other car steps a young man who is also unscathed, no, is not hurt. And they're just amazed that that they're not hurt. And she says, you know, this is really amazing. What how wonderful this is that neither one of us is hurt. Let's celebrate. So she says, I've got a bottle of wine here in the car, and let's just celebrate with us. So she brings out the bottle of wine, pulls out the cork, and hands it to him. And he's just so taken up by this gorgeous young woman. He tips it up and he drinks half the bottle. And then he hands it to her. She puts the cork back in the bottle and she says, you know, I'm just so overawed by this. I just don't feel like drinking any. Besides, I just see the police are driving up right now. That doesn't really relate to anything, unless you want to talk about how she would rate as a peacemaker. I don't know. But,
troublemaker.
Okay, we as Christians worship the Prince of Peace, and we should therefore be pretty good at peacemaking. And yet the church has a pretty bad history in this regard, right? Garrison Keillor tells about this in regard to his church in which he grew up, which was the Brethren. The Brethren left the Anglican Church in 1865 to worship on the basis of correct principles. They were united in their opposition to the pomp and corruption of the Christian aristocracy. Unfortunately, once free of the worldly Anglicans, these firebrands were not content to worship in peace, but turned their guns on each other. By the time I came along, there were dozens of tiny Brethren groups, none of which were speaking to any of the others. And we could say this is true all through Christendom, this has certainly been the case. The Brethren are not alone in their dismal record of peacemaking. But now let's get into Isaiah. Let's take a look at several passages. First of all, Isaiah 57, 19 through 21. And just go ahead and read it, somebody.
Peace, peace. To the far and near, says the Lord, and I will kill them. But the wicked are like the tossing sea. They cannot keep still. Its waters toss up mire and mud. There is no peace, says my God, for the wicked.
Okay, thank you. Is there a familiar phrase in there?
No peace for the wicked.
No peace for the wicked. Okay, now we know where that comes from. I want to share with you just a little bit again of Walter Brueggemann, my favorite commentator on all of Old Testament stuff. The book it's in the bookstore, I ordered it up there, so you're welcome to take a look at it. And if you want to really get into the book of Isaiah, into this stuff, or anything in the Old Testament, I'd recommend Brueggemann. He's written lots and lots of books. Okay, he says in regard to this, a little comment here. In regard to the wicked, the wicked are like the endlessly churning waters of chaos, ruthless, disordered, defiant, and destructive. They keep unsettling and disturbing and threatening what tenuous order there is. If we take the declaration of shalom together with the image of surging, defiant, and recalcitrant waters, we may connect this marvelous text to the narrative of Jesus in Mark 4. In that parabolic narrative, Jesus and his disciples are swamped by the surging waters of the chaotic sea. Jesus addresses the waters, shalom, and the waters subside in obedience to Jesus. Okay, let's move right on to a few others here. Just break in any time with comments if you want to. Let's go on to 59:8. 59:8. Okay, anybody?
The way of peace they do not know, and there is no justice in their paths. Their roads they have made crooked. No one who walks in them knows peace.
Okay, thank you. Okay, here's a general conclusion regarding Israel's failure. No peace, no justice, no peace. That's the way it is. There's a community totally lacking in shalom. Exploitation and injustice are widespread, and Israel is indeed poisoned. Verse 9, somebody read verse 9.
Therefore, justice is far from us, and righteousness does not reach us. We wait for light, and lo, there is darkness, and for brightness, but we walk in gloom.
Okay, thank you. Okay, the result of shalom is what? In here, in that passage. I mean, the result of no shalom, excuse me.
Darkness.
Right. And that picture, that theme is used all the way through, of course, in these passages and so on. I ran across a contemporary paraphrase of Psalm 23 recently, and this one verse is paraphrased this way: even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, because I am the strongest and meanest man in the valley. Is there anybody or any nation that operates that way? What's the strategy of our administration these days? Probably to create something like the Roman Empire, maybe? I don't know. Whatever it is, and the whole ideal and goal, I'm sure of a lot of people, are that this is what will bring peace to the world. But in lots of things that go on, it doesn't work that way. Isaiah 63, 1 through 6. Okay, go ahead, anybody. Don't be bashful.
Who is this that comes from Edom? From Bozra in garments stained crimson. Who is this so splendidly robed, marching in his great might? It is I announcing vindication, mighty to save. Why are your robes red and your garments like theirs who tread the winepress? I have trodden the winepress alone, and from the peoples no one was with me. I trod them in my anger and trampled them in my wrath. Their dew spattered on my garments and stained all my robes. For the day of vengeance was in my heart, and the year for my redeeming work had come. I looked, but there was no helper. I stared, but there was no one to sustain me. So my own arm brought me victory, and my wrath sustained me. I trampled down peoples in my anger, crushed them in my wrath, and I poured out their lifeblood on the earth.
Okay. All right. Does that sound like peacemaking? What's going on here anyway? In this passage that talks about peace all over the place. Here we come with this thing. What's that all about? A picture of God the warrior.
He's talking about vindication and vengeance.
Vindication and vengeance, okay. And because there is this evil influence that's constantly causing turmoil, something drastic has to be done, right? Something like that? red Edom, the word red and the word Edom are very close to each other. There's kind of a play on words there, if you were to read the original language. The wrath of God. Of course, it's not only in the Old Testament. Take a look at Revelation. Just a real quick look at Revelation 19, 11 through 16. Revelation 19, 11 through 16. And notice, watch for similarities here between what we just read. Would somebody read that for us, please?
Then I saw heaven open, and there was a white horse. Its rider is called Faithful and True. And in righteousness he judges and makes war. His eyes are like flame of fire, and on his head are many diadems. And he has a name inscribed that no one knows but himself. He is clothed in a robe dipped in blood, and his name is called the Word of God. And the armies of heaven, wearing fine linens, white and pure, were following him on white horses. From his mouth comes a sharp sword with which to strike down the nations, and he will rule them with the rod of iron. He will tread the winepress of the fury of the wrath of God, the Almighty. On his robe and on his thighs, he has the name inscribed, King of Kings and Lord of Lords.
Okay, thank you. You notice any similarities between this passage and the one we read back here in Isaiah? Does it remind you of any hymn that we have that's well known in our hymn book? How about Battle Hymn of the Republic?
Yeah.
The Grapes of Wrath. This is where this comes from. This is the basic background, scriptural background for that hymn. And we can go on and talk about the role of how, whether that means we should be pacifists or not, but let's hold that probably forever and get on to asking, who is it that wins the victory here? Is he asking all the people to come and go to battle?
The word of God.
God.
Is the name.
Okay, God is going to do this. God is doing this. Yahweh is going to do this. And then this, of course, ties in with all of the passages in the Old Testament that are so troubling about God the warrior, God in war in the Old Testament and all that sort of thing. But at least keep this in mind, that God is the one that wins the victory, not us. And we'll go on to take a look at another thing that Brueggemann has to say here, and then we'll move on from there. He says, in regard to this passage, the term rendered red in verse 2 is Adam, clearly a play on Edom in verse 1. The sentry recognizes that the approaching stranger has the appearance of one who is wine-stained from trampling grapes. There will be a time when Yahweh will act decisively to right the wrongs of the world and to establish a just, peaceable rule on the earth. The God who comes in this violent mode is the God who will make things right in the midst of an abusive world. It is the final conviction of Jerusalem that Yahweh will not quit until the victory over all negations is secured. But second, such a massive hope in the face of circumstances to the contrary requires a God who is vigorous and forceful to the extreme. As a consequence, the extreme theological conviction cannot be extracted from the imagery of violence that we may find deeply offensive. A nicer God or a happier God might be preferred. But Israel entertains no romantic illusions about the vexed context of its life. Here is voiced faith fully situated in the context of a community under threat. It is evident that this mode of faith has left a deeply problematic residue of violence for the continuing faith claims of Judaism and Christianity. again, an issue then, which is very, very difficult for us to deal with. But keeping in mind that in this passage, it's the promise that God will win the victory, and that this is, they're inviting us to have hope and to have confidence that this is the way it'll be. Now I'll turn to 60, verse 18. We're just kind of skimming on here. Isaiah 60, jumping around, 60, verse 18. Okay, just anybody read that.
Violence shall no more be heard in your land, devastation or destruction within your borders. You shall call your walls salvation and your gates peace. Okay.
A vision of peace. A vision of peace. That's an important concept for us today. A vision of peace and how this plays out in the life of the church and in our lives. Now we're going to look at one which is a little longer, and it is a vision of peace. Isaiah 65, 17 through 25, a little longer passage. Isaiah 65, 17 through 25. And would one of you just go ahead and read that for us too, please?
For I am about to create new heavens and a new earth. The former things shall not be remembered or come to mind, but be glad and rejoice forever in what I am creating. For I am about to create Jerusalem as a joy and its people as a delight. I will rejoice in Jerusalem and delight in my people. No more shall the sound of weeping be heard in it or the cry of distress. No more shall there be in it an infant who lives but a few days, or an old person who does not live out a lifetime. For one who dies at 100 years shall be considered a youth, and one who falls short of 100 shall be considered accursed. They shall build houses and inhabit them. They shall plant vineyards and eat their fruit. They shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. For the days of a tree shall be the days of my... The days of my people be, and my chosen shall long enjoy the work of their hands. They shall not labor in vain, or bear children for calamity, for they shall be offspring blessed by the Lord, and their descendants as well. Before they call, I will answer. While they are yet speaking, I will hear. The wolf and the lamb will feed together. The lion will eat straw like the ox, but the serpent, its food shall be dust. They will not hurt or destroy on any my holy mountain, says the Lord.
Thank you. A vision of peace. What strikes you here? Anybody? Anything that strikes you in this passage?
Well, the living to 100 years.
Okay.
And I was thinking how much closer, you know, in our country, even the life expectancy keeps heading that direction.
That's interesting, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Life expectancy. Okay? Anything else that strikes you here in this marvelous, marvelous vision of peace?
They will enjoy their handiwork.
Enjoy their handiwork. Or,
you know, what they build and what they plant.
They'll be around long enough to to see the fruits and the benefits of this sort of thing. Okay?
And they're heard, before they call, I will answer. And then this idealistic picture of the wolf and the lamb together.
Using the imagery of animals to picture peace in the world.
I saw that also as extending beyond humans
yes.
to the creation. The
yes.
Peace in the creation.
Absolutely, yeah. Not just humans, but the animals, and then the whole creation, the horrible abuse that's going on in environment and creation will somehow be resolved, and that there can be peace there too. These are all part of that picture. Anything else?
The contrast with what's really going on in Jerusalem right now.
Yes.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is so sad that the very place where the prophet is seeing this as being fulfilled is today a place of violence, and of course the media highlights the violence. There's a lot of great stuff going on, a lot of good peacemaking going on in Jerusalem, but we don't see it. The media just brings out all the violent stuff. And okay, other things that hit you here. Martin Luther King had a dream that is very familiar to us, that there would be peace, and the prophet here has a healing dream. It's a vision of healed memories too, isn't it? The former things will not be remembered. How many times do you and I need a healing of our memories so that the former things that could keep us upset can somehow not be remembered or made the focus of our attention? The sins and the evils and the calamities which we have experienced in the past, if we can put them behind us and look to the future without the burden of this weighing heavily on us. Okay, let's see now. I want to just share with you something from the other book that I have up in the bookstore there that I recommended by Tony Campolo. There's a whole chapter on having a vision. By the way, this guy who writes is real popular writing, real fun to read. And he's a conservative Baptist, not a conservative Baptist, but he's out of a conservative tradition. And yet he really breaks through in all these areas of race relations, feminist issues, environmental issues. And he's got, in this book, he has a couple chapters on each one of those, along with the rest. But I just want to share with you what he says about dreams and visions. In this day and at this time too, we are called upon to act. We're called to live out dreams and to follow visions. Like those saints of old, we are required to make some leaps of faith, to daringly step out and attempt the great and sometimes seemingly terrible things we believe God has called us to do. We cannot wait for certainty and the assurance that everything will work or work like we would like it to. We must take risks if we are to live out our dreams. We must be ready to bet our lives on visions. And even if we appear to others to be like Don Quixote, we must dream the impossible dream. One thing is certain, if we fail to live out our dreams and visions, we perish. Like it says in Proverbs 29. Okay, now. Well, this should help us at least again remind us today to ask ourselves, you know, what kinds of visions of peace do we have and what are we doing about it? And is there anything, you know, do we really have anything in us anymore of a vision of peace? And what effect is this having in our lives? Martin Luther King put it this way one day. He says, we never get rid of an enemy by meeting hate with hate. You get rid of an enemy by getting rid of enmity. And Joseph Sittler, who was very good with words, put it this way once. Peace is commonly thought of as if it were disengagement, a splendid sort of isolation, an interior and private serenity, a well-insulated tranquility achieved by detachment, a sort of bovine contentment sustained only by a virtual ignorance or dismissal of all that maddens, saddens, and gladdens people. Great statement, isn't it? Peace, however, no, this is not right. Peace without justice and a sense of the broad context of human solidarity is futile. These are not the things that make for peace, but solidarity and justice are what make for peace. And now I'd like to just also share with you a couple paragraphs out of Frederick Buechner's book, Wishful Thinking, his little article on peace. One of the titles by which Jesus is known is Prince of Peace. And he used the word himself in what seem at first glance to be two radically contradictory utterances. On one occasion, he said to the disciples, "Do not think that I have come to bring peace on earth. I have come to bring, not come to bring peace, but a sword," in Matthew 10. And later on, the last time they are together, he said to them, "Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you," John 14. What sense do you make of that? Anybody? A stumper?
There's two. The one is more of a personal peace, and the other is a corporate peace.
Okay, that's a possibility. Other thoughts on that? This isn't an easy one, I know that.
The one makes peace possible.
Okay. One makes peace possible. Okay, if we have the peace of God in our hearts, okay? Let me just show you what he says. The contradiction is resolved when you realize that for Jesus, peace seems to have meant not the absence of struggle, but the presence of love. For Jesus, peace seems to have meant not the absence of struggle, but the presence of love. So think about that. And we could go on to have all kinds of debates here this morning about legalizing concealed weapons and children and toy guns, violence in pro football, violent video games, globalization, violence on TV and the movies, domestic abuse. A lot of those issues we could talk about, but we need to move on and just do some other things here. Jesus chose, of course, Jesus himself chose to identify with less of a warrior strain, and his message seems to be much more of a overall in contradiction to a lot of the encouragement to fight all the time in the Old Testament. But again, that's another whole issue. Here's some pieces of advice about peacemaking that I ran across recently. Remember, resentment is like taking poison in hopes that your enemy will die. Be kind to your enemies, it will drive them crazy. I don't have to attend every argument I'm invited to. And Wendell Berry, in his collected poems, has a beautiful little section which goes like this. Who has invented our enmity? Who has prescribed us hatred of each other? Who has armed us against each other with the death of the world? Who has appointed me such anger that I should desire the burning of your house or the destruction of your children? Who has appointed such anger to you? Who has set loose the thought that we should oppose each other with the ruin of forests and rivers and the silence of birds? Who has said to us that the voices of my land shall be strange to you and the voices of your land strange to me? Who has imagined that I would destroy myself in order to destroy you, or that I could improve myself by destroying you? Who has imagined that your death could be negligible to me? Who has imagined that I would not speak familiarly with you, or laugh with you, or visit in your house, or go to work with you in the forest? And then he says, in the thought of you, I imagine myself free of the weapons and the official hates that I have borne on my back like a hump. And in the thought of myself, I imagine you free of weapons and official hates. Just a few words from Wendell Berry there. And then a little story. I'm going to wait with that. Time for discussion questions. Okay, let's divide up into groups of four. Can we do that? 1, 2, 3, 4? Maybe three. 1, 2, 3, 4. Well, three or four. I guess we have Some will be three and some will be four. And again, three groups. Now let's make it two groups. Just divide into two groups. Divide into two groups.
Math is easier. Peace doesn't work with math.
I'm going to give you all a list of discussion questions.
And that's my butt's face.
Yeah.
We are sitting there. Okay.
I'm going to give you each a copy of these discussion questions, and then I'm going to suggest something to you as to how you should use them. Because you can't possibly go through everything.
I've got my glasses.
The first one.
Okay, now when you get these, maybe you can focus, each group focus a little bit on different ones. Now, I think you can all talk about number one, maybe. Well, appoint somebody in your group to keep you moving, okay? We'll take 10 minutes. Both groups can talk about number one and two, okay? All right, number one and two. This group, however, can go on to three and four if you like. This group over here go on to five and six if you like. And so one, two, three, and four, one, two, five, and six over here. That's just a suggestion. If you'd rather do something else, you might guess. And then the last three, just glance at, think about, and they're more like do homework if you want to do them, because it would take a little outside work. And we're still looking for a cartoonist. I haven't found one yet. We'd like to do cartoons of these kinds of things. Go ahead, 10 minutes.
This first one could take almost
Yeah, and don't try, if you can't cover them all, that's all right too. Do what you can, okay.
Well, they're often on about money. Yeah, and power.
That's your power. Gary, you've been building.
Yeah, well, I'm in the middle of construction. Oh, yeah. Actually, we haven't had too much food. What we've had, our people live in panics for about change.
Try to have a leader in your group so you keep it moving, okay? Have a little election.
Money and power, I think it would change the pretty.
Oh.
So we went through this whole thing about us to try out.
Change.
I couldn't see, so I said,
you're the light bulb. So everyone was fine, and I was business addicted to it. Like, change.
My didn't say anything about the new one, didn't say anything about the beautiful or anything. He said, I hate the lights. So I mustered all my pastoral control, and I said,
"The church right I remember was a real old one."
They
met women as a full membership. Probably the main reason was that they couldn't find a man that would be a Sunday school superintendent anymore.
I remember what that was, that it had to be a man.
Yes.
Sunday school superintendent. So two guys traded off for her.
I came up with it, but I said, that's who he took care of.
Changed his name to Evangelical Rufus at that time, but I think that was a grown man.
Okay.
I don't remember exactly.
And, women could have full membership. Huh?
Yeah. Before that, so women could not come to the church meetings.
I said, I'm sorry, I'm not giving them to cause you anxiety, but I'm a new pastor. And I need to learn these hymns.
Well, it does say,
and you're going to help me play them on tour. So that actually is the last time that I can play them. So actually, that's pretty good.
So they knew it was you, maybe you too.
Yeah.
You
know,
well, that's what says too.
Yeah. Yeah. Wasn't very good.
So am I the only person who's not clergy related in this group?
I think so.
Sorry about that.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I was thinking about that. I'm not clergy related. And I want to remind, I think it's a leveling war because I hate our hierarchical stuff.
Good,
So then I think we should appoint you as leader to keep this group.
Because I know how.
No, I'm just thinking about it. It seems to me that
decrease in terms of the church fights, like if what you
church fights for me are
in the public,
and I've been in a few, it's kind of
being behind closed doors, it's just one on one.
Is that it's not only about
just like I'm 10
because I get to feeling that I'm over at a particular point in what is the principle or what am I really wanting? And it's not to create disharmony or to be the
power issues or
the agitator. I suppose sometimes
get bunch of food.
Usually,
it's to say, well,
and occasionally come out.
Those are the hardest ones to deal with. Is there nobody knows what's going on?
Do people have a say? That seems to me to be important because you can't have the group. You can't be a leader unless you have followers.
I think people feel
have followers unless you have a leader.
People feel very threatened.
We're about halfway through, by the way.
So we got everyone. Anyway,
I would add to that education.
Exactly.
When we went to church, I just want to say, one of the ladies in the church said, not in prayer.
What's our answer? What do we deal with?
As members at
we define the problems somewhat.
I love my church. My church, and she does not, the pastor at that time was not. He was making all the decisions and they didn't even know to clap and they got a great big grant to go ahead with the project. So I think this
is
we've got to know what you said, the key word you said is that the leaders are in
mediation.
The congregation. It's not the
with two people.
Yeah.
No.
I think that
first
the
pastor,
is
I think.
The people of God
and
unless they are
to encourage all
these changes.
And the Quakers have a wonderful sense of discernment of having the community just to discern. And when is it right? When is God calling people to do something? And what is the call? And that's what we want to know. And that seems to me a whole bunch of the stuff that we're fighting about is really
somewhere.
Is it really going to have
that section now? Because you have
good
a bunch
receiving
of key
communion
words. You've been handling that first section.
What's the name of
the I was hearing a lot of key words like control.
I think the other thing is to compare with the church finds is just two people.
Structures
are just two groups.
They
can get a whole set of different dynamics.
I just said
in either case, that's one of the answers.
Then you were just saying sharing in decisions.
I said a
lot. That was
my question.
The other thing I think is a key that we need to remember
a lot of things with,
that
in terms of what are some of the memories
to understand each other.
Well, and what is the call to go? That's all my question is. Is it a call to be bigger? Or is it called God's call to be God's people? And I think we get really mixed up. That's my I like the last question, the question about violence. I'm not willing to tell my brother about that question, but I'm interested in the last question. The last question that we would get. A non-church prayer tells you that since you are truly including Christianity, because it's associated with violence and with less religion we have, the better off we will be. He goes on to tell you that if you must have religion, it has to be indifferent about it.
My answer would be, you're right, religion is not a good thing, that therefore become Christians. It's not religion. Religions are man-made.
It's kind of forgiveness someplace in here, and that's easy to say, but hard to do.
That's also an easy to say.
It's not a good thing.
Because we have to keep reminding you that Christians are all sinners.
even if you quote Ken for
you're not into religion, you're fine.
What happens the next time it comes up?
Well, like everywhere else.
If for 1 minute
at least
to by dealing with those that claim to be non religious, you're gonna have people
create some of the factions.
Well, then there has to be a change.
Not
wrong. No, there has to be a change in itself.
Well, yeah, I heard somebody.
Well, I see it. You know, what does the scripture say? What does Lord say? Love your enemies. He didn't say conditional love your enemies, but don't forget. Or and also, how many times? I think maybe that's an issue. How many times? Boy, that's.
Yeah, the 2 minute warning.
We're brothers and sisters. You'll
find out.
Oh, 1 more minute.
Where this person's coming from. But then,
okay.
3 or 4.
And then square it. Yeah. Where is the world going?
See, this is the area we're talking about. Okay. I really am not religious, but I'm very spiritual. I always say, you are? I'm not.
Part of my thing about this, I'm sorry. It seems to me that peacemakers aren't having a great
context for 3.
And that when you look at, take a historical view, there have been some, I mean, Luther quoted, this morning.
Mm-hmm.
He prayed the prayer of St. Francis.
What can you do about terror?
Our tradition has this solidly peacemaking,
just
wilding part to it. And I have some friends who give me this thing about
skip what the media says, what's behind it.
And that what is the church saying?
Yeah,
well,
they
came to Elizabeth and they founded hospitals and did works of mercy. So there's a counter record, which I think maybe is your education thing.
In the Middle East,
to all I can think of the Crusaders.
Okay, let's come back together again, folks.
Christians.
Break into the middle of your good conversations here. But.
This idea of violence and religion is, I guess it's not violence.
Some of the terms. I mean, it's the pertinent.
Okay, let's come back together. You don't have to change chairs, but just sort of move in such a way that you can see everybody again. I'd just like to go through and get a little feedback here from all of you. Some of the words of wisdom that have come out of your groups this morning. Just we'll go through and touch on some of these just briefly, and you can share with all of you if you come across something that you feel is kind of exciting to say. Number one, what church fights have you experienced? How did you deal with them? How would you deal with them in the future? What church fights have you experienced? Anybody just quick?
Well, this group appointed me as a spokesperson.
Okay.
I'll say something that I know that they will add.
Okay, that's fine.
Because these are not quiet women.
Oh.
I can note that I'm the only non-pastoral person in this group.
Oh.
So that's how they appointed me as a spokesperson.
Okay.
Church fights, money, change, building. People don't want to change.
Okay.
And even though there are a lot of really great things that happen, a parishioner will point out the thing they don't like.
Okay.
And strong, curmudgeonly kind of attitude.
All right.
The idea of who's got the power and who's leading and who's following.
Okay.
The leader can't lead if he doesn't have, he, she doesn't have followers and vice versa.
Okay, okay.
And some of that is about control. We mentioned that oftentimes the education piece is needed.
Okay. Education can help.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And for me, since I'm the non-clergy person, I want to have my say.
Okay.
Feel that I've been heard. I don't like those decrees that come down from Caesar Augustus. They just don't work for me. Don't
work. Okay.
So yeah, that's kind of some of the.
Okay, great. Thank you. How about over here?
When I was growing up, we had an annual meeting in our church, and the question was, should we admit the women to full membership? One fellow said it says right in the Bible the women should be silent. Another fellow said it says right in the Bible you should eat, drink, and be merry. Thought they were going to come to blows, but we voted to admit women to full membership, and I think the principal reason was that they couldn't find another man that would be a Sunday school superintendent. Yeah. So we voted to
recognize women. That's how you solved that one. Okay. Any other thoughts on number one, question one over here?
I think on that, how do you deal with them? Some, a couple of people mentioned mediation.
Okay. Sometimes mediation.
And prayer.
Prayer. Yeah. Very important. Okay. Paul talks about this a lot because there are all kinds of squabbles in the churches in the New Testament, right? And he's always talking about prayer, and of course, in one of the Gospels, is it Luke, where this whole idea of mediation is a method of dealing with these kinds of things. Okay, other thoughts?
Well, I think the other thing that we also talked about briefly was that many of these issues were the church, like kind of things, were small, kind of behind closed doors, mm-hmm. and then when it went public, it was big, and it was very difficult at that point not to create factions. And,
okay.
So it's almost one of those things where there was a smoking fire that was not getting addressed.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It wasn't getting addressed. It was
super. We kind of mentioned that too. Is the congregation should be the deciding people, not the clergy.
I think that it was very. I think most church fights become very reactive rather than there being any type of proactive action to try.
Yeah, right. Not enough discussion, in open discussion, structured about critical issues. The meeting comes and bang, there it is. You know, that's right.
Okay. Excuse me. I use the word discernment. I think the quicker model of listening to what God is calling the community to, rather than what do we want to do to make our building bigger, better, all of that kind of stuff.
But
what really is the call of God for the community? Mm-hmm. I think Lutherans could learn from the Quakers.
Okay.
In that aspect.
Well, then not having to make a permanent decision immediately. The trying out, we tried this, Lou was good at giving, they wanted to change the name of the congregation 2 years before the, 2 or 3 years before the 100th anniversary, can you believe? And this was so totally necessary because they moved the congregation just a few blocks from another church that didn't, it was this very same name on the very same street. And but they weren't so sure about this, you know. So they had, they would try something, and he did this with almost every change. They would try something for 6 months and see how it worked. And maybe it was with the name of the church, but or with time of the church starting or something like that. But you try it for 6 months, and then we come back together and say, has this improved our congregational living? You know, and that was really helpful.
Okay, well, we could go on with that too, but let's go on to two real quickly. What are some of the memories that need healing in your congregation, in your family? What have you done so far to heal these memories? What might you do in the future to help heal these memories? Maybe this is more of a subjective thing, which, did anybody want to just say something about that one before we go on to the other? We can't spend much more time on it. we're going to cover the others.
We skipped it to go down.
Okay.
Oh, we had a couple comments.
Okay.
Memories set the stage for when the next problem occurs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because the faction has already, the mm-hmm. quote, allies have already been
yeah.
laid down. Mm-hmm. And what can you do about it? And some things you tossed out was create new members.
New members. That can help a lot. Okay.
What about this one? What about a congregation that's ran a pastor out?
Throwing the pastor out.
Ran a pastor out. And what do you do to heal those memories? I mean, I'm
yeah.
asking.
Yeah. That's a tough one.
And
it's happening all over the place.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, one of the most interesting things that we said about, in the reading, was that the past will not be, and the former things shall not be remembered.
Yeah, former things not remembered. You kick a pastor out, or the pastor is, then you have factions. You have those who like
right.
him and those who don't. And then they, that goes on. And how do you heal those memories? That's why I think some of the bishops decided to get, they invent this thing called interim ministry.
Yes.
But anyway, that at its best, interim ministry can help with that. Yeah. Okay. Let's go on just real quickly because we're running out of time. You learn that your friend is being abused verbally and physically by her husband. What might you do to help? Did any of you cover that one at all?
Not so much.
No, we kind of skipped that one. Okay. A major threat these days is terrorism. What do you think can be done about it? Any thoughts on that?
The brief thing we started to talk about was that in some ways it's desperation.
It's okay, the causes of desperation. Understanding the causes and dealing with the causes.
And I think the other thing which we didn't really talk about was, but it's true, is getting groups to the point where terrorist acts occur is not the result of the last 6 months or the last even
mm-hmm. yeah.
2 years or 3 years. It's the result of years upon years.
Yeah, there's no quick fix, right? Number five, you get into a discussion with your brother-in-law about ecology. You express concern about the violence we are inflicting on nature. He calls you a tree hugger. How would you answer him?
I'd kick him.
You'd kick him.
I'd say, yes, I am.
Affirmative. Okay.
Well, I have a very neat experience with that. Right now, I'm on what we call a tree preservation committee in the town in which I live. However, we cannot even agree on the name of this thing, so now it's being called Urban Forestry Management.
Okay.
But okay. You start analyzing the two names, you get just a little idea of what our committee is like. It's a really complicated
thing. Okay.
All you want to do is yeah. cut a couple of trees.
Well, yeah. some want to cut them down.
Yeah.
And some would like to plant.
Yeah,
really
well, sure.
But it's yeah. going to be good for me to be on this committee if I can not get sick each time I go to the meeting.
Sure, yeah. Okay, any other quick thoughts on
Luther?
Yeah.
We had a very prominent
mark up there
in the Northwest because of the spotted owl issue
mm-hmm. yeah.
here in the Northwest. And one of the main things that we had more trouble with were the logging and the industry
yeah.
more than we had with the environmentalists. And I think one thing that I felt wrong with our environmentalists was that they decided to put spikes in the trees to purify what the chainsaws as they tried to cut the trees down, but they were killing the trees themselves.
Okay.
Doing that.
Yeah.
But it's spike about 6 inches through the tree and all the way around the tree, they were doing it as bad as the loggers were.
Yeah, the issues are so complicated, and I see we're just about out of time, but...
Can I just...
Yeah.
I think a lot of this stuff that we've been talking about the whole day is because we're not remembering that we, this is, everything we have belongs to God, and it's His world, and it's His battle. And this is brings such peace to know that if we connect with Him, if we ask Him to use us in that end that He has in mind, we're not going to have to be the deciding people.
Okay.
We're not going to have to be the one. He'll guide us into the opportunities of who and who to meet that is going to come.
That God will help us. If we this again, prayer and becoming as intelligent as we can about the issues, and also the whole business of, like somebody said, the stars that disappear still shed their light many, many years after we see their light. And the peacemaking we do has long, far-reaching effects way beyond our lives. So it's still worth doing. In regard, one quick thing.
Can I have a proverb for you?
Okay, a proverb,
you
quick.
Close,
yes.
Quick?
Yes.
I just thought of it quick. It's not a really proverb, I suppose. But what did I write? Righteousness is not being right.
Okay, very good.
To be right.
Yeah. But then I just want to say one more thing, because I always like to have the last word.
Yeah, he always gets it.
The children's story. Okay, here's a good idea for a children's story. The teacher was speaking with a group of children. Let's see, wait a minute, is this the right one? Wait a minute, wait. Here we go. The lion and the boar. One hot day in the middle of summer, a lion and a boar went to a spring to drink. "Step aside," the boar said. "I was here first." "I showed you where to find the spring," the lion replied angrily. "I will be the first to drink." Quickly, the disagreement escalated from a verbal confrontation, and they began to attack each other with great ferocity. A few minutes later, stopping to catch their breath, they both saw some vultures seated on a rock above, waiting for one of them to be killed. The sight so sobered them that they quickly made peace, saying, "If we continue to fight, the only winner will be the vultures." Okay, thanks for coming today, folks.
Thank you.
Have a good day.